people from the Christ have very much an issue. They said to me, but it's not an issue. And it's fine. Searching for what's called the concepts of truth are fully answered.
Okay. Daniel, he's a desire.
Yes, my main desire is to lead a good life, actually, and to, but also at the same time not have to think about really cognitively work it out all the time, but think a lot, and to be able to actually lead a good life without having to think about it really hard. To be a good person by my own, by kind of high standards, you know, to do good, but also be free and have fun and enjoy myself.
In what way?
Collecting
stamps?
Yeah. No, just within the interaction with people and within daily life
flying kites together.
No, I just want to enjoy subtle pleasure. You know, not extreme pleasure.
Like what?
Well, just
talking about it, like painting or something.
Not really that.
Playing crossword puzzles together.
No, not playing crossword puzzles. Can you
be more specific, please?
Just doing daily things, eating meal with someone, or with people in general, or doing whatever work it is in a work environment, or in a study environment. So just be doing those daily things, which some people could think are mundane, but to get a bit of a subtle pleasure out of those things, from a subtle thing.
Does anyone understand what you say?
Yeah. When you look out the window and you see a nice view and you feel good for seeing that, that's a subtle pleasure. It's not something that you go pay for a movie to see a movie and have the pleasure of watching it. It's something that you do and you enjoy just because you're doing it. And that's a subtle pleasure.
Okay. So would that be the fullest extent of your desire?
No. That's what it looks like. I have 5 million. I have other desires as well. And when I read the fire of desire, like, oh man, that's an appropriate label for a book. Because it can't feel like a fire.
What? It can feel like a fire. Looking out the window and seeing a nice view.
No,
like
that doesn't feel like fire.
It's
non fire. It's just like, oh, it's really nice. The most subtle pleasures aren't necessarily a fire. And
what's the fire?
A fire of desire. When I read fire of desire,
yeah,
it's like, okay, this is fire of desire is almost something too extreme. And that's something that personally I kind of struggle with, is to have that, to not have that, you know, like intense fire of desire that kind of can cause that attachment, then like extreme pleasure, then extreme kind of
Never deal with that. You've never dealt with that.
Oh, yeah, I've definitely dealt with that. Yeah. So there would be a desire to come past that.
Interesting. What is your experience of desire? Your realization about desire?
I desire to find that one thing that I can do that I'm very, very glad of, that fulfills my purpose. For my specific body type and my specific personality is made for. Yes, I desire to be able to use this instrument, but for some reason I'm driving this instrument, which is my body, and I'd like to be able to do whatever it is in that body that it's made for.
What is the strongest desire you felt?
this is going to sound a little bit funny, but I'd like to harmonize it, like my body to sing without having to sort of pick up an instrument.
That's the strongest desire.
Yes.
Pick up an instrument.
No. I like my body to sing without having to pick up an instrument.
That's the strongest, that's the fire of desire in your life, past, present.
Well, there's some feelings of appropriation.
Feelings for?
Appropriation.
Appropriation,
like...
having children.
Yeah.
Going to be a father, that's a strong desire.
Yes, I'm fine.
Not usual for a man of your age, isn't
it? Oh, yeah.
Any other men here have a strong desire to actually multiply? Definitely a special craft. Yes. To multiply.
Good way to carry on the family, no? You know?
You also? You have a strong desire to
multiply? Like I said, it's a good way to carry on the family name, you know? You don't want your family to, you know, run to the dead end, because, you know.
Okay. Anyone else with a strong desire to multiply? And you? You've already multiplied, yes?
Yeah.
Did you have a strong desire? Like, this kind of happened?
First one happened. Second one, she waited 2 years and we say no, no, no. And then it had to happen. Otherwise, we would have been like that. And then mine was enough. We got a little brother or sister, so the next guy's coming out in 2 weeks.
Okay. Hey, you have a strong desire to... Yeah, be a father. Not you, Ron. You've been there, done that?
Mm-hmm.
Did you have like a strong desire?
No, I think it was an evolution of things. Or something. The role one is just from the planet.
That first marriage, and then not wanting to expand the family.
Carry the family, someone said, carry the family name on.
It's interesting. You mentioned carrying the family. In my family, I have the same name as my father and grandfather. I'm number 3. The third. But I told them. That's it. The buck stops here. Everybody's disappointed, as it is not going to be a fourth. It's interesting to hear these things. Generally, if you get a room full of guys, you know how they talk. Did we ask you?
Really? No. You
have a strong desire to multiply?
I don't have a strong desire. I mean, I don't think about it that much at the moment. So I do enjoy being around children, but I find them fun to be with, and quite awesome characters of life, but I don't have a strong desire for children at the moment, no. Maybe one of these days, but not today.
Okay. And we're just discussing desire, just get a feel for the situation before we go deep into our session here. Did we ask you, what is your experience of desire?
Maybe to be president of some country.
Be president of some country. Really? Yeah. Which country do you have in mind?
Any country. Any country, doesn't matter.
An exotic group tonight. So that's your strongest desire. That's the fire.
That's the ultimate desire.
That's what burns in your heart day to day. I've got to be president somehow. You think he would make it as Prime Minister of New Zealand?
Yeah.
Okay.
desire, I think the strongest desire is that...
if you've experienced it, when you think of desire, yeah. This is what comes to your mind.
It's never been satisfied. When I say that, I've been desiring happiness, and I've been running after almost everything. It's been there.
Almost everything, like?
Like, whatever comes to mind, materially. Like, with money, with house, with partner, everything, you know. Ultimately, after a few days, you feel that now that's not it.
After a few days only?
Yeah, I mean, I have to maybe something wrong with me. Yeah, but when that rises again, you know, like something else comes. Yeah. I feel that too.
So, what's the strongest desire you can remember?
To be a beautiful girl.
To
be a very beautiful girl when I was with her. And,
now I'm with you.
Wow. Yeah. She was this India title at that time when we were together. After a little while, I just didn't like the way she was behaving and stuff. And I wanted to command.
Why
did you? I wanted to command what's right is right. I mean, I wanted to just, my point of view is right. And we should have arguments frequently. And then I said, now it's difficult to carry on with this person. Yeah, so these things. Yeah. If I look back, I really feel that things might have worked out. But
you want everything your way?
Not anymore now. I'm learning my lessons. It doesn't work that way.
You're trying to be, maybe if I could suggest, you're trying to be kind of a, in one way, you're kind of a modern, contemporary guy from India, but then when it came to her, you were insisting on the traditional.
Not really that, not the traditional things, but yeah, certain, you had certain differences, so yeah.
So my point is, you had a strong desire, I've got to be with it. Right?
Yeah.
And then after some time,
it just faded. I mean, I thought that would be good for if she would go out of my life.
Well, so then why does desire do that to us? One minute we want this, I've got to be with you, I've got to have you. Then, couple of us here, get out of my life. What's going on here? Fire of desire. Desires you have experienced.
Oh, it's definitely have to be the ocean, mate.
To be the ocean, or
you? No, just to be close to it. I get really excited when I see a good weather pattern coming. And
you're a surfer.
Yeah, that's my strongest desire, just, you know, get out. Get up north, shippies if it's on, or, you know, wherever the conditions are right, and that's just basically, I've been chasing everything for the young fella, so, and the desire, the flame hasn't, you know, died at all, I mean, it's gotten stronger, if anything.
You'll be doing that all your life?
Totally, yeah, until the day I die, or I can't stand, you know.
One day you won't be strong enough to ride away.
I'm still, being my heart, but, yeah, I mean, it's just all the materialistic things go out the door when you're out there, you're alone, you know, in the ocean, and yeah, it's a beautiful thing, you know, I don't think I'll ever get over it, yeah, there's a lot of other things in life I'm passionate about, but it's going to be my strongest passion in life, it's saw me through some rough patches. And,
so after you die on your surfboard then?
Well, who knows, you know. Hopefully there's good ways where I'm going. But, yeah, I don't know.
Could be a fish.
Yeah, well, dolphin, whatever, you know, shark. I just got a strong passion for the ocean, whether it be, not just surfing though, sailing, fishing, just the whole environment.
That's the strongest urge in your life.
Yeah, like when I'm inland, you know, I've been away from the ocean a few times in my life, and when I'm away from it, I feel very anxious, and you know, I've got to get back, you know, get back to the coast sort of thing.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Nice. And behind you?
My strongest desire all my life.
Well, when you think of desire and you, what do you think about?
The desire for inner peace.
For inner peace.
For contentedness, to actually feel content and not actually desiring to...
Like you wake up in the morning and just,
I've got to have nerves. It's like, I'm fine now, but that's the biggest, strongest drive in my entire life. and also to know why I was here as well.
That was the strongest desire in your life.
Mm-hmm. And I sought every avenue to find it and place myself in the situations where I thought I would find inner peace through material means. But sorry, that's my last thought. Yeah, feeling content and happy with myself and just finding every activity in the present to be joyful. That's my desire.
By every activity in the present to be joyful.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
But whether it be scrubbing the toilet or whether, you know, anything to actually get joy out of it and have a smile on my face constantly.
Is it possible?
Yeah, it is possible.
How would it be possible, just out of curiosity, it's off the subject, but how would it be possible?
I get it through meditation, and I also get it through exercise. I don't know if it's an endorphin thing or what's going on, but I get it from doing those things.
It's kind of similar, but because I write a lot of like poetry and stuff, and like story writing and stuff like that. But when in, I talk about not having desires, so in this sense, I don't think about desires really that much. You know, I like to do this and I like to do that, and I like to be there and I like to be here, and I like to think about this person, or I like to think about that thing, or what I'm doing. But it's all really doesn't sort of. It's all kind of the same thing to me when I think about it. I like this, I like that.
Yeah, but just trying to get, just to help us out of it. Yeah. And when we just feel like, this is what I must have. Yeah, I'm thinking about this, thinking about that. What, like, really arouses your yen? Like, this I must have.
Really, it's like when I do things for other people,
mm-hmm.
and I see that they get something out of what I do, like with my massage, when I give someone a good massage, and they're like, "Wow, that feels great," and they're like, "Really awesome," and they give me some good feedback, and
it makes it after makes after you work me over an hour and a half.
Yeah,
I'm off a 12.5 hour flight from Los Angeles and stuff. Got off the plane at like 5 in the morning and he came. What time were you there?
About 7:15.
Yeah, he was there. He worked me over an hour and a half. But
it just felt really good knowing that I've done something for someone else that makes them happy, you know? Like even with my writing and my thinking of stories that I want to write, I don't write it for my own. I write it because I enjoy the writing, but I write it because I like other people to read it and tell me what they think, and then that gives me sort of like, oh, I want to do more of this, do more massage, do more writing.
You like
and stuff.
So when you think of desire, you think of making others happier.
Yeah, well, I don't think of the word desire. I just sort of do and I be myself. You know, and that, and what I was saying is that making other people happier kind of like makes me feel really good myself. That's right. So,
when I had a career, my major desire was to be good at my job. Probably more importantly, to be recognized that I was good at my job.
It sounds similar, almost like what you're saying. Yeah. What job was that?
I was in sales and marketing.
Sales.
Marketing,
just whatever products you had.
It didn't really matter what the product was. It was the importance of the job. And
you had to figure out how to push it, huh?
Yeah, like you.
To me, it matters what the product is. That was quite a bit.
So.
It was important for you to get recognition that Yeah. You're a top marketing, marketing man.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Desire.
When I think of desire, I think of more kind of yearning, kind of wanting to fall in love and all that sort of thing. And
that kind of desire.
Yeah, that kind of desire. Yeah, that, I mean, that does
get like, get into a relationship with someone.
Oh, probably would like to get into a relationship with someone like that. And but it's more in the past, and but just kind of really focus on it, even though that's probably totally, you know, no good, you know? But...
Who's solving
no
good?
No, not no good, but not compatible, you know,
oh.
Or unattainable or whatever, yeah. But now...
Forbidden
but I'd
fruit.
Say, eh?
Forbidden fruit.
Yeah, it must be. but I'd say what I was passionate about would be learning, yeah. Learning for myself, learning for my career.
And what is the goal of all this learning?
I don't know. I think you just can't. There isn't a limit to how much you should know. You know, it's sort of an infinite thing.
What's
you know,
the purpose of it all?
Oh, just stimulate your mind. You know, feed it.
And then.
Alright,
Desmond? For me, everything I do, I see that as desire. I mean, obviously, not all desires are as strong as others, and that's why I take particular courses.
That's why you take
a particular course of action.
Uh-huh. What's a big desire?
And the big desire would have to be exploration.
Exploration?
Yeah. To explore the world as it is and to explore as it could be.
So, how do you do that?
That's what I'm exploring. That's part of the journey. So, I need to find things out about my environment and find things out about people and how we work as a society, as societies, right? And yeah, that's what my desire is.
So, all day you're like just looking into all these things.
No, not all day. That's my biggest desire.
Ah, good point. Desire.
I actually have a problem because I don't seem to have a burning desire.
Never have.
Well, I like to be able to have a, you know, go surfing and that's just it, but I don't actually have that.
Never in the past.
Well, not really, no.
Never, like, this is what I want.
Maybe just in love, maybe, but not in the day.
Hey, that's something. That's something.
But not in the heart.
But still, that's.
But it would be kind of nice to have that. I can't wait to have my feelings desires.
So in the past, you had it for certain kind of relationships.
Yeah, it was fine.
You know what? You got a little burned out or cynical, like.
I don't know.
All right. Well, I'd like to move on just so we get into the deep water a bit. I'd like you to consider a level of existence beyond happiness and distress. Generally, people want to be happy and they want to fight off distress. So, if you look at your day and your nights, you'll see that so much what you're doing is just to bring happiness to yourself and to fight distress. And most people, of course, don't mind being happy, but they don't want distress. My question is, can it be possible that there's a level of existence beyond both happiness and distress? In other words, when we look at things from the transcendental point of view, from the purely spiritual point of view, you might view happiness as an agitation of the mind, just like distress is. Do you know how you feel when you're distressed about something? It's just like, you know, there's anxiety, there's just It's a disturbance to be distressed, to be unhappy. But now, let me ask you to consider happiness. Just like distress hits you, doesn't happiness also hit you? Oh, I'm happy. So from the viewpoint of transcendental out, both happiness and distress are not desirable. They're both considered agitations of the mind. They distract you from a higher level of existence. Distress strikes you, happiness strikes you, distress strikes you, happiness strikes you. You go up and down, up and down. Oh, I'm happy. Oh, I'm distressed. Oh, now I'm happy again. It gets to be quite monotonous, this cycle. Is there a level of existence above that? This question is asked in Bhagavad Gita. We're going to take a look at Bhagavad Gita, the ancient spiritual textbook of India. And I would like you to consider that perhaps my life is meant for something more than just dodging distress and scrambling after happiness.
Are you talking about a constant sort of like a... You're talking about a constant above that cycle of distress and happiness.
Yeah.
Like, you've got the cycle here of distress and happiness, and above that there's a level plane sort of thing. Or
above that is something else.
Yeah, right.
And so I'm going to propose that to you as where we should be going if our life and our desires are truly going to be successful. In other words, you have to desire something. Now, most people desire to be free from distress and to be happy. Whether to be happy in relationships, or to be happy surfing, or to be happy, dealing with people. But is there a level above that? Once we start considering that possibility that there's something beyond happiness and distress, then we leave ourselves open to much higher planes of living. What I'll do now, we'll pass out Bhagavad Gita to everyone. Thanks. We're going to take a look at some of these ancient texts and see how we can apply them to our daily life.
If you assign me one, how the others?
That's a very good point. Now, while we're passing the books out, that's a very good point. Often it's said like that. Don't we need one to understand the other? Like, don't you need happiness to understand distress? Don't we need distress to understand happiness? That's like saying you need hot to understand cold. You need poverty to understand what is wealth. What I'm saying is, let's jump above the whole duality, the whole couple of happiness and distress, and get to a level which exists beyond happiness and distress. As long as you say, well, I need to experience misery to understand what pleasure is, you're caught in some kind of loop. But if you jump above that to the kind of existence which doesn't depend on anything else, like let me be miserable so I can understand what happiness is. Get above the whole, it's called duality. Hot, cold, pain, pleasure, fame, infamy, poverty, wealth, sickness, health. It's called dualities. They come in twos. It's a prominent feature of material existence that things come in twos. Birth, death, pain, pleasure. So a prominent instruction in Bhagavad Gita is to try to jump above this level of constantly fluctuating happiness and distress. Let's see. If you turn to page 144. look at text 56. I'll read the Sanskrit. Dukesh panud vigna mana sukeshu vigatas priha vitarada bhayakruta stitadir munyaguchate. For the translation, one who is not disturbed in mind, even amidst the threefold miseries, or elated with it when there is happiness, and was free from attachment, fear, and anger, is called the sage of steady mind. There is a great occupational calling, to be a sage of steady mind. That means, because you are firmly established on the purely spiritual plane of life, you're beyond happiness and distress, beyond miseries and elation, because that happiness and distress, miseries and elation, this is the ups and downs of material existence. It gets to be quite boring and repetitive. Up one moment, down the next, up one moment, down the next. You can either tolerate that, okay, that's the way it's going to be, or you can try to go above it. So, I'm recommending we should try to go above it, that there's a higher plane of living than even just tolerating the happiness of distress. You see, we'll get right into it. The happiness and distress is in relation to your body and mind. If you can understand that there's an identity about you that has nothing to do with the body and mind, that's beyond the body and mind, then you'll also be able to understand how to live life beyond the body and mind. But as long as we're identifying with the body and mind, then we must be caught in the whole cycle of happiness and distress. Because the body and mind are hand in hand with happiness and distress. So if you want to escape that cycle of happiness and distress, then you have to escape the false identification of the self with the body and mind. As long as you identify yourself as the body and mind, you are subject to this cycle of happiness and distress. So the whole point of Bhagavad Gita is to take you off of this platform of false identity. Get you on the solid spiritual platform based on your spiritual identity, and then you're free from this constant onslaught of happiness and distress. Now I'm happy. Oh, now I'm sad. And I think I'm happy again. Oh, I'm sad. It just goes on and on and on. Your whole life gets consumed by this. So, the quest, as presented in Bhagavad Gita, is to situate yourself in your spiritual identity. And then you're beyond this constant coming and going of happiness and distress. Not that you're just tolerating, hell, this is the way it is, you just gotta accept it, but you're actually living on another plane. So this is very interesting. How to be a sage of steady mind.
Can I ask a question, sir?
Yeah.
Sorry, I was curious, using the term that you're saying, it's a higher state of mind. I'm not sure if I'm understanding it correctly, but are you saying that being on the plane above is not to want to be happy either, as well as not to want to be in distress?
Well,
and that you will not experience happiness in that respect. You will not experience happiness if you are on the transcendental plane. Is that right?
It's a different quality of experience. It's not of the nature of happiness and distress as known on the level of those who identify with the body and mind. Therefore, it's not even, to be precise, it's not even called happiness, because that gets confusing. Happiness, distress is something on the material platform, meaning on the plane, live by identifying with the body and mind as yourself. As soon as you break out of that false identification, you're entitled to something beyond the other sort of happiness and distress, you're entitled to that higher level. In Sanskrit, there would be precise terminology. In English, you don't have that precise terminology. In Sanskrit, for example, happiness is called sukha, distress is called dukkha, and then beyond the happiness and distress, or the sukha and dukkha, is something called ananda, which is transcendental bliss. But English doesn't have these terms. Sanskrit is a language made for enlightenment. English is a language meant for business. So, yes, it's sometimes the terminology gets difficult using English. But yes, indeed, there is a quality of existence beyond just the constant coming and going of happiness and distress. It's a completely distinct reality. So that's what this information is pointing to. You're a sage of steady mind because your situation is somewhere else. That's the point. Now, does it seem to you all like you could actually get to a level beyond happiness and distress?
No. Well, yes, I know.
I'm just tossing it out to arouse your appetites. Who do you think that it could be possible?
I reckon so, through persistence, you know, understanding, practice. You know.
Understanding, knowledge is very important.
Yeah.
Just like, I don't know how to surf, but you put me out into the ocean with a surfboard, I don't know what to do. I was in Israel last month, and you know, some person I knew there, was it Israel? They were trying to teach me how to body surf. Where was it? Oh no, it was before I went to Israel. I was in the Gulf of Mexico off the shore of Texas. And one of my acquaintances were trying to teach me how to body surf and also to use, what do you call it, a boogie board?
Yeah,
and I just couldn't get it, you know? I didn't know what to do, you know. He'd been doing it since he was a young kid. He just kind of wave around, he just lay on the board and away you go. I tried to do the same thing, okay. And I would go nowhere. Because I didn't know the technique, you know. It'd be nothing for you. But for me, it was, I tried like 20 times. I just, you know, I would just maybe travel, you know, half a meter distance. And he would just sail on into the shore, you know.
But you just needed a bit more instruction and knowledge before you went out.
Yes, exactly. Similarly,
once you're on the ocean.
Very good point. Similarly, people stuck in material existence need a bit more knowledge and technique before they go any further.
Yeah.
Exactly. Otherwise, they'll be like me. You jump on the board again and again, you go nowhere. Exactly. So the whole point, to be a sage of steady mind, is to get that knowledge, to master those techniques that will take you beyond happiness and distress. That is a goal we're striving for. Not that you just feel yourself successful. I've had some good days, I've had some bad days, I'm just hanging there. No, that's actually not the true standard that we should be striving for. I remember I had an uncle, he would tell me that, you know, my boy, you just gotta roll with the punches, you just gotta ride the waves, that's the secret. And even as a young kid, I would say to him, there's gotta be something more than that, just rolling with the punches. Be ladies, in case you know, it's a boxing term, you know. And ride the waves, no matter what wave, just, you know, hang in there. There's gotta be something more than that. And there is. There is a qualitative level of existence beyond the coming and going of happiness and distress. Now, what gets in the way of our achieving that higher qualitative level of existence? Let's turn to page 143, page 34. This is text 55. I'll read the Sanskrit. Sri Bhagavan Vacha Prajahati Yada Kaman Sarvan Artha Manogatan Atman Yeva Manatushta Sitapragya Tadochite. The translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O Partha, when a man gives up all varieties of desire for sense gratification, which arise from mental concoction, and when his mind, thus purified, finds satisfaction in the self alone, then he is said to be in pure transcendental consciousness. So, think about that. The desires that spring from mental concoction. Quite a powerful term. That means that much of our material existence is lived in our mind. The happiness and distress of material life comes to you through your mind. Your mind's like a projector, and it's playing out a DVD, and you identify with it. Yes, I know. Yes. Wow. You've got this DVD playing in your mind, and you live it out through your mind. It's actually a concoction. You can eject the DVD, but most people don't know that. Hey, this is me. They're lost in this DVD that's playing in their mind, and they identify with it. One of the purposes of the transcendental instruction in Bhagavad Gita is to get you to stop identifying with that DVD that's playing in your mind. It's to get you to dare push the eject button. And that seems scary. If I push the eject button, my mind will go blank. I'll disappear. No. There's something superior to be had. It's not that you possess nothing, but you let go of the inferior and you take the superior. It's not that you become void and null. No. There is a higher qualitative level of existence, and you can experience that. And then automatically, you'll lose your taste for the lower levels of existence. It's pure self-interest. But what gets in the way of your elevation is just this identification with the body and mind as the self. And then you've got to undergo happiness and distress. When you identify with that DVD playing in your mind, you just gotta go with everything that it presents to you. Just like when you go to a movie, and if you really get absorbed in the movie, or if the movie's very good, you actually start to feel emotions based on what's on the screen. You laugh. Ah! You get distressed. If there's a lust scene on the screen, you get rusty. And it's all there are images on the screen, but you're identifying with that. Even though, you know, it's just a movie. I don't know if you've ever had an experience taking little kids to a movie. I haven't done it back in 35 years, but yeah. They sometimes really can just get lost in it. And you have to tell them, take it easy, it's just a movie. You ever had an experience? You start to scream, ah! Similarly, if we identify with the movies, the DVDs showing in our mind, then we have all these onslaughts of happiness and distress to cope with. How do you stay with a steady mind? You've got to eject that DVD. But you can't have nothing. It's impossible. The mind won't let you have nothing. You have to have a superior quality of existence. Now, think about that before we move on. Mentally concocted desires. When a man gives up, and a woman, gives up all varieties of desire for sense gratification, which arise from mental concoction, this is a call to challenge yourself. The pleasures that I take in life, how much are they a concoction of my mind? When you go to a movie, you know this is a concoction. I'm paying money to see someone's concoction. I hope it's good. Now, how much of our own desires are concoctions springing from our mind? due to conditioning from many lives, countless births in this world. And all these conditionings build up birth after birth. All these mental concoctions pile on top of one another. How to get to the bottom of the pile? It's an interesting question. We definitely need to strive by powerful spiritual methods if we're going to get to the bottom of this pile of concocted desires. But please think about that point. Does anyone have any questions about this concocted desires? Desires that spring from mental concoction? It's a very interesting concept.
I'm just thinking this. As long as you're physically fit, these things, they will definitely be there in you. They will definitely affect you one day. As long as you're physically fit, it's beyond a certain stage when you grow old. You might not want to do certain things.
Can you be specific?
Desires for mythical functions, like you said, maybe earning money. After a certain stage, you feel that already not fit enough, you know, you cannot earn.
So that's what you're saying, Rupert Murdoch? He doesn't seem to have lost the passion, huh?
Material people, I'd say. I mean, it's just that there are certain people who are achievers, they do not stop.
Mm-hmm.
But then, majority of the people, they would be driven by this force as long as they are physically fit and within a certain age span.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I was thinking. How you've got to be really, really strong to overcome this.
You know, you need knowledge and to strive by right means. You can do that as a very young person. Depends on how spiritually elevated you are. So, no, it's not that you have to wait until you're old and burned out and withered. No, why should you wait until you're old and useless before you start acting for your real self-interest? You can start that at any age in life. The earlier the better. In other words, I agree with you. The urge is powerful, but there is knowledge that's even more powerful than the urge. And that's what you should get. So that's what is being offered in Bhagavad Gita. Knowledge that's even more powerful than those urges. And I appreciate your identifying those urges as powerful. It's true. But there's something more powerful than that. And we've got to find that. Then there's complete hope in our life for success. You're not supposed to just bite your teeth and, I can't do that. I'm not supposed to do that. It's not going to work. Just like I was reading in the newspaper here, that some persons here want to imitate something that's done in the USA and in England. This is the Just Say No campaign, in which you take a vow that you're going to,
just in his church.
Just
in his church.
Yeah, well, that's it, yeah. You're going to take...
Complete abstinence and that. I've read a few things in the paper about it.
Did you take
that?
What's that? Did you take it out?
No, I don't know.
You vow that, not until marriage, no way. And so, that's all well and good. I personally support it, but I know it won't work unless the people get superior spiritual pleasure. You can't just bite your nails. I promise.
Pick up my nail polish.
Just clench your fists until you turn purple. No. You've got to have something better. So therefore, it's so important that we're introduced to a higher qualitative level of existence beyond even happiness and distress. Once we taste that level of existence, we'll be able to easily turn our heads away from this lower pleasure. Not just a matter of saying, no, to the vow, no. So, I want to move to our next topic, the liberated person. We discussed this in Wellington last week. What does it mean to you to be a liberated person?
Self-aware.
Self-aware. Aware of the self.
Your own consciousness and where you want to go and what you want to do. And
now, would that be
very content with it as well?
Would that be simply to be aware of your body and mind?
No, and spirit as well.
What's that?
Well, I don't really know until you die.
Okay, you're honest.
Yeah.
Anyone else? Liberated person. Yep. Yes.
Free of attachment.
Free of attachment for anything.
Yeah.
Can you do it? Free of any attachment?
No.
All right. Right. Yeah. Let me tell you a secret. Neither can anyone else. Mm. It's impossible to be free from attachment. Because the nature of a conscious living entity is to have attachment. So to be a sage of steady mind doesn't mean freedom from all attachment. It means to have freedom from material attachment. The only way you can get complete freedom from material attachment is if you have spiritual attachment in its place. But you have to be attached to something. So the whole purpose of Bhakti Yoga is to get you to transfer your attachment from matter to spirit. To have spiritual attachments instead of material attachments. So when the Bhagavad Gita talks about when you're free from attachment, it's referring to material attachment. Attachment to matter. Things have a beginning and end. Bodies, minds, like that. Material objects. When your mind is free from attachments to those, then you can start to talk about peace. But your mind can only be free from material attachment when you have spiritual attachment. Spiritual attachment means between the individual soul and the supreme soul. That is actually what Krishna consciousness means. The attachment, the eternal, ever fresh attachment between the individual soul and the supreme soul. That's actually the definition of yoga. Yoga means connection. So, when there's this connection of transcendental or divine attachment between the individual soul and the supreme soul, then you're properly situated. Then you are a sage or standing mind. You're beyond the platform of mere physical and mental existence. And that platform of physical and mental existence is caught up in the happiness and distress. Happiness and distress is in relation to your body and mind. It's not in relation to the spirit soul. But no one knows anything about the spirit soul these days, but to speak of understanding the supreme soul. So therefore, people just bounce around from happiness and distress, hope for the best, endure the worst. That's all they can do. Lack of knowledge, lack of proper lifestyle management. So, liberated person. What do you think of? Free from?
Anxieties? Anxieties?
Free from anxieties, and you're a liberated person. Is that kind of a negative definition? Let's say you're banging your head against the wall all your life, and I get you to finally stop. Does that mean you've attained something?
Well, that wasn't the entire thing.
All you've done is you're feeling the relief of not banging your head against the wall. But now, what are you going to do with your head?
Well, someone whose mind is free from being affected by all these things that are going on inside the material world.
Okay, then what is their mind doing?
Well, it can be focused on higher things, or the higher things can be involved with.
So that means we've got to find out about the higher things. Because the mind has to have some content. It's not that you flush out of your mind the material world. You've got to have something there. So, the more that you can strive by right means to focus on the platform of life beyond the body and mind, beyond happiness and stress, the more you actually see the wonder of your true identity as spirit soul, part and parcel of the supreme soul. So, liberated person. Sometimes people say, like, what's a liberated woman? Do you have any liberated women yet? Yes. What does it mean to be a liberated woman?
I do what I want. See, I do what I want and I see who I want. No one tells me what to do.
Liberated woman, huh? You do what you want.
Well, in the material sense of the word, yeah.
You have any liberated men here? What's a liberated man?
I think now that, and for without this ending, you can do what you want, and it's not just in the material sense of the word, it should be in all senses. So, whether it's spiritual or material, so you can do what you want. If you choose to believe in something that might be spiritual, it's a choice, and your choice is your freedom.
Can you give me an example?
Or choose to do anything. If you can choose to believe and do what you like, then you're a liberated person.
Well, what about your body? Your body ages, so what do you do about that as a liberated person?
You live. You live.
Mm-hmm. But your body's aging. How do you choose that your body doesn't age?
It's always time to stop.
Wait, one at a time. One at a time. How do you choose that your body doesn't?
How do you choose that the world keeps turning? Yes.
So what would you do then? But your body's aging. So if you have freedom, and what do you do about it? You can't control the whole world, but it's your own body. What do you do?
Yes, you're a liberated person. You're not something greater than that. So your control is only over what you have control over, and no more than that.
So, if there is a way how to rise above the changes of the body, then wouldn't that be real liberation?
We're getting there.
So then what to do? My body's aging. Now, how do I exercise my freedom of choice to be a liberated person? Do I just watch the body age and say, hey, that's the way it is? Or?
There you go.
And we don't. We don't as a human race. That's what I was saying. Right?
We don't.
Like, if you want to get down to that and poke holes in that, I'm saying that as the human race, we have people that want to stop the human body aging. And that's what they spend their lives doing. That's their fire of desire, is to use that choice and that freedom of choice to do that.
Mm-hmm. Now, perhaps there's another way to go about this. liberation means to recognize that the body will go through its phase of birth, death, old age, disease. But that's the body, and we're not the body. We have an existence on another level. So, although you can't stop physical matter from going through its usual phases, you don't have to identify with it. You can be alive in another way.
But we already established that. We established that, like, about 5 or 10 months ago.
So, then, how...
So what I'm saying is I'm still liberated anyway, knowing that I'm going to age, but I'm also aware that I have that spirit soul that is going to move on.
To?
Well, whether I become a rock or whether I become a star in the sky, I'm not sure, but I'm aware of that spirit soul. I still realise, yeah, I'm liberated. It's when I get attached to this body and everything that takes place in my life, that's when I'm free.
Okay. Now... That's a very interesting point you raised. Okay, I'm not the body, I'm some kind of spirit soul, and I don't know where I would be heading. But if you're spirit soul, what is the overall spiritual reality that you're part of? That's what a liberated soul would know. In other words, just like the material body belongs to the material cosmos, you can say the body belongs to New Zealand, it belongs to the human race, it belongs to Earth. What does the spirit soul belong to?
The oneness of everything. The oneness of everything. I believe that everything is one.
With everything is, what is the nature of that oneness?
Oh, it's just like when you get down to quantum physics, there's like more space between atoms than there is actual atoms, and because chair is just the conception of everybody's minds put together, so that we recognise that this is chair.
So, if we understand that we're spirit soul, it would seem that we should understand what is the reality that the spirit soul is a part of. Otherwise, we'll be left with just the position that, no, I'm not the body, I'm some spiritual something, and after death, I mean, I could be a rock, I could be this, I could be that, I could be the moon, I could be... Just like there's a material world, which is the homeland of the material body and material mind, what is the territory of the spirit soul? That's very essential information. Without that kind of information, then indeed we say, well, it's just, I can appreciate you saying it, it's just all, you know, that means we need further knowledge. Just like if I would say, well, Russia, New Zealand, Israel, you know this. But as we get distinct knowledge of different terrains, we can see that there are differences. So, for the material body, you have the material world. Now, what does the spirit soul belong to?
Energy, life force. Mm-hmm. Energy.
Fair enough, the spirit soul is energy, but what is the realm that the spirit soul belongs to? Just like the material body belongs to the material realm.
Well, he's saying, look, where does everyone's soul sort of come from and go to, you know? Or
that's a good question. What is the overall spiritual reality?
Well, my personal belief is just an energy force, you know?
Okay, well, what is the nature of that energy force? How does it behave? What are the symptoms? What are the characteristics? Where does it operate? These are all essential questions.
Well, it's just universal, isn't it? Universal energy? I don't know.
Doesn't it seek to express itself through connection? Experience?
Why?
God knows.
No. In other words, I'm not just playing word games with you. I'm trying to introduce the possibility that to be liberated means the spirit soul doesn't have to at all interact with matter. It doesn't have to. In other words, there's a spiritual reality which is free from interaction with matter. So that possibility is what Bhagavad Gita is introducing you to. So therefore, I thought it was very important to bring up this point of liberated person. Liberated from what? To do what? It's like you said, I'm a liberated woman. I do with my body what I like. And no one can tell me what to do. What's a liberated man? Any definition for a liberated man?
I'm just a liberated. Have you got to work, you pay bills, you just pay your ticket, so you're not liberated. You're not free at all, in fact.
Yeah. You got to do what your wife says, right?
If you want a happy home.
That's the word for liberation. So, let's look at chapter 5, text 22. That'll be, I'll give you the page number in a second.
297.
This is a provocative one. I'm warning you. This is provocative, but it's provocative on purpose. I'll read the Sanskrit. Vayas prashesh vasatatma vindatyatmani yat sukham sabrama yoga yakatma sukham akshayamashkunte.
That's 21.
Okay. Yeah, I meant 21. Thanks. Page 297. Such a liberated person is not attracted to material sense pleasure, but is always in trance, enjoying the pleasure within. In this way, the self-realized person enjoys unlimited happiness, for he concentrates on the Supreme. Now, let's check out the purport here. I warned you, it's provocative. Sri Yamunacharya, a great devotee in Krishna consciousness, said, I'll skip the Sanskrit this time. Since I have been engaged in the transcendental loving service of Krishna, realizing ever new pleasure in him, whenever I think of sex pleasure, I spit at the thought, and my lips curl with distaste. A person in Brahma Yoga, or Krishna consciousness, is so absorbed in the loving service of the Lord that he loses his taste for material sense pleasure altogether. The highest pleasure in terms of matter is sex pleasure. The whole world is moving under its spell, and a materialist cannot work at all without this motivation. But a person engaged in Krishna consciousness can work with greater vigor without sex pleasure, which he avoids. That is the test in spiritual realization. Spiritual realization and sex pleasure go ill together. A Krishna conscious person is not attracted to any kind of sense pleasure due to his being a liberated soul, meaning due to being completely beyond the range of material and mental desire. Now maybe you don't want to go there.
Ask a question.
Yes.
What about procreation? Because you have to have sex for procreate. Quite naturally, you know.
Yes.
But I mean, to keep the world going on as it is, and in the sense to develop ourselves and be able to raise children, we need to, you know. So it can't be a completely all forgotten sense.
That's a good point you've raised.
That's a question.
Wait, let me get to that. I told you this would be provocative. I'm going to just throw it out just to stir you off a bit. Okay. Since you've asked, there are yoga techniques in Krishna consciousness for even having children. In other words, how to bring into the world high quality children of advanced consciousness. That's different from ordinary procreation, which any animal can do, you just do it, you know. But there is a technique of how to procreate so that you attract to the womb of the mother an advanced child that can actually do great good for the world. These techniques are not well known these days. So when you read a purport like this, in which it says a spiritual realization and sex pleasure go ill together, it's referring to the non-yogic type of sexual interaction, which is just for bodily pleasure, mental pleasure. Nevertheless, transcendentalists do have children, but they just use that activity only for the purpose of bringing into the world a high-class, highly advanced child. It's a very ancient part of Vedic knowledge that the consciousness of the man and woman at the time of conception attracts a certain quality of child to the womb. So therefore, those who are parenting children have a great responsibility toward the quality of the population. You see, it's actually not the quantity of the population that's the problem today, it's the quality. When the world is burdened by billions of people who have no idea really where they come from, where they're going, what is the self, this is it's a burden. So if those who are properly situated in proper spiritual consciousness purposely engage in that procreative activity, purposely to bring into the world advanced children, and they do it in high consciousness rather than just carnal consciousness, they can actually do great value for the world. But that's a different kind of deed than, you know, the stuff you see on the movie screen and try to act out in your own home. So I'm explaining something to you very, it's quite advanced, but you asked, so I'm just giving the nuts.
Yeah. No, thank you. That's cool.
Sounds interesting, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Rather than just grunting and, you know, exchange of secretions and emotions and then, kid's born, you know, and then, well, maybe the kid will know what he's doing. We don't know what to do. One couple, they were telling me, well, you know, the girl's pregnant, you know, I don't know what I'm doing, she doesn't know what she's doing, but maybe the kid will show us the way. I've heard that quite often, you know. It's like no one has a clue, you know. So you have parents who are bewildered, and then you bring into the world children who are bewildered, and the bewilderment just increases. So there is a way how to procreate in Krishna consciousness so that you bring into the world advanced children who can actually benefit the planet. Mm-hmm. So that takes procreators of high consciousness.
Because there's a high rate of pregnancy for young people with today, you know, like 16-year-olds to 18-year-olds getting pregnant, like unplanned pregnancies. Right?
So you can imagine what kind of children,
yeah.
The quality of a child that's attracted because of karma to take birth in those kind of circumstances.
There was younger age for mothers a couple hundred years ago than there is now.
Or was it planned or
unplanned? Yeah, that's good. It was planned in those back then. So it's like a lot of people say that simply the having people having babies at 16 or 17 years of age, you can't do it. It's the unplanned that they're actually objecting about.
You were planned for what reason a couple hundred years ago? So for me, what you talk about now is reading the Srimad Bhagavatam Tamman with Commander Moody. Commander Moody and Vibhavati. And it was actually fully planned for Krishna consciousness. We were going to bring a child into this earth that's going to be conscious. Whereas a couple of hundred years ago in Britain or wherever it was, that God's so-called planning, where it just went for what? Planning for what? Well, we're going to have a kid, but for what? Well, nowadays we're going to have a kid, but for what? Which is almost the same consciousness as having one of us gave in the unit with us. Well, what's that for? For what? There's a totally different between the huge difference between real pure consciousness or Krishna consciousness. We're going to have this child for a reason, or spiritual reason.
And more than saying, since you asked, see you started, more than saying, just we're going to have the child with high consciousness, you actually. Execute techniques for uplifting and purifying your consciousness so that at the time of procreation, the consciousness of the man and woman is at such a high level that they attract that similar quality child to the womb based on the consciousness of the man and woman at the time of at the moment of conception. These are lost arts. But you asked. Yes?
Well, this is a pretty dumb question, but. I understand everything we're saying a little bit, but why did God make sex pleasurable if it wasn't to be enjoyed?
Okay. When you were. Since you're being a bit provocative, I can be provocative too.
I'm just asking.
Okay. Yeah. It's my fault because I knew this was a story. Alright, when you were a little girl, do you remember liking to jump up and down and spin around to make yourself dizzy?
Mm.
Yeah. And you got a bunch of little kids do the same. And then finally your parents told you stop. Did your parents let you stop doing it?
No.
Okay. So you got some pleasure out of it, didn't you? Jumping up and down and spinning and getting dizzy and then falling on the ground and laughing?
Mm.
Didn't you get some pleasure out of it as a little girl? Do you do that now?
Yep.
Can you jump up and down?
Yes.
And fall around and laugh?
Yep. Up on out in the field or something, a bunch of people.
Now, you say there's some pleasure to it, right? But could there be higher pleasure?
Yeah. I'm not acknowledging that there are higher pleasures, but I'm saying God's created everything. Why would he make sex a pleasure and then in the same breath to deny?
Because there's a whole different level of pleasures, and you choose, you're free to choose what level of pleasure you want.
But we're human beings, and we are here, I'm here, I'm not imaginary. And
but you can choose a higher level of pleasure.
Yeah.
The provocation of this text is to poke you to think there could be pleasure much more intense and higher than even sex pleasure. That's the provocation here.
Yeah, I'm not denying that.
Right.
I'm just saying, why is sex pleasure ruined?
There's different levels of everything in this world. Just like in cars, you've got a Hyundai, then there's a Mercedes. Yeah, people, you know, want different levels of pleasure. Why not go for the best? So the provocation in this verse is, he had this person saying, since I've been engaged in the transcendental loving service of Krishna, realizing every new pleasure in him, whenever I think of sex pleasure, I spit at the thought and my lips curl with distaste. Now the guy's not a pervert or something. He's not some kind of repressed, you know. He's just tasting something so far superior that he can say that. It's not that he's got some kind of weird attitude, you know. Maybe, you know, he never had a good girlfriend before or something. No, he's just, you know. Maybe there's some equivalent in surfing, you know, that, you know.
Definitely is.
Compared to what the average person
you
does.
You've got to keep stepping it up if you want to keep that desire, you know, and that pleasure happening. You've got to ride bigger waves and hollow waves. Keep that stoke happening, you know, because otherwise it just gets mundane. It's the same old, you know, same old, you know.
So, in surfing, you recognize there's different levels.
Yeah.
So, basically, that's what this text is pointing out to, that there is a pleasure so beyond ordinary happiness and distress, including the happiness of sex pleasure, that a powerful yogi could just, when he thinks of his past experience with sex, he could just spit.
Oh, man, that was right.
I've got those are puny waves I was riding.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
This is the big one. It's just a question of superior and inferior. So, basically, this provocation is introducing you to the fact that it could be something much, much more pleasurable.
Mm.
So if you're open to that possibility, then it all makes sense. Otherwise, you can get a bit angry. I've had a few good rolls, man. But if you dare to think, there could be a level of spiritual happiness that is so extraordinary, it makes even that, you know, the greatest pleasure in the material world, sex pleasure, pale in significance. Wow, that's something. I mean, that's what I thought when I first started getting it. Really? I gotta go for that. I prided myself on being a pleasure lover, you know, back in my university days. And then I started reading information like this and thought, wait a minute, I'm supposed to be a pleasure lover, and here's something I don't know about. I thought, I gotta find out about this in order to keep my reputation intact. You know, I'm impressed with all the pride pleasure, you know. There's some kind of pleasure that's so great that when you think of sex, you spit. Wow, what is that? That's what I thought, you know. I've got to go, this is what I got to go for. this is the real thing. Now, some people, I'll admit, some people read this, they just think, where? You know. Not that you were thinking like this, but some people will be much more, how would you say, insistent that you were asking very quietly, wait a minute, didn't God give it to us to enjoy, why is it here? God didn't want us to have it. He must have just not, you know. Really, you know. Fortunately, no one here has done that, so he's not thinking about it, but sometimes it happens. It's just trying to open you up to wider possibilities. As stated in this translation, in this way, such a liberated person is not attracted to material sense pleasure, but is always in trance, enjoying the pleasure within. In this way, the self-realized person enjoys unlimited happiness, for he concentrates on the supreme. But this is not about religious belief. It's not about, you know, religious sentiment. It's about actual precise knowledge of the supreme and how to connect with the supreme. You can get so much pleasure from that Krishna consciousness that when you think of even sex life, which the text admits is the highest pleasure in terms of matter. It says that quite rightly. It's the highest pleasure in the material world. Okay? Fair enough? Still, there's something so much better that when you think about that highest pleasure in the material world, you just snap it.
And it's the highest pleasure in the material existence. Then it kind of makes sense that if you're going for that pleasure all the time, you're going further and further away from it.
If you go for material pleasure, you're bound up with material happiness and distress. That's the problem. If you want to break out above that level of material happiness and distress, you have to stop activities that are simply meant to please the body and mind. You have to get on the spiritual platform and learn spiritual activities in relation to the spirit, soul, and the supreme soul. That's another dimension altogether. It's not all one in that sense. There are differences. There are different energies. If you put yourself under the influence of one energy, you get one result. If you put yourself under the influence of another energy, you get another result. And that's what Krishna is trying to teach you in Bhagavad Gita. All the energies are one in that they come from the same source, but still the energies act differently. So if you put yourself under the influence of a material energy, you get one effect. If you put yourself under the influence of a spiritual energy, you get another effect. That's the point. Even though both energies come from the same source. All right. Very interesting. That was quite dynamic and illuminating. We could go on, but I think you want dinner also. But I hope you think about these points deeply. Our intent was not to answer every question that you might raise, but just to point out that there could be different directions you could be heading in. So, and to whet your appetite and maybe motivate you to kind of stick your toes into the water and, you know, catch a few of these waves.
Come in.
All right. Thank you very much.
Cheers, man.
Thank you.
When you want to do it, what's a number you can do every day
without it? No, maybe.
And you just come to our house. Didn't I tell you how to gradually increase? Why? So you're not going to kill you,
right? I'm not fine. I don't think it would work. I just say it's amazing. It's good.
Sorry, who this might belong to.
Oh, yeah.
Yours,
thanks.
Okay.
No, right.
Yeah. Okay.